Hi there. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I have a very special guest with me, Tyler Susco. Tyler invented a shoe that was designed to help people who trip when they're walking reduce their tripping or even avoid it and increase their walking speed. His background is in mechanical engineering, robotics, and neurotherapy, and he's applied his knowledge and expertise into this shoe. On today's episode, we talk about how these shoes are different from other shoes on the market, how they work, and who will benefit from them. The big question is, how does someone with MS actually improve their mobility, strength, energy, independence, the list goes on. My name is Dr. Gretchen Hawley, physical therapist and multiple sclerosis specialist. Welcome to the Missing Link podcast. Tune in as I share the top strategies and exercises to help you gain control over your life with MS using research-driven insights and advice from top industry experts. Whether you're newly diagnosed or have had MS for over 30 years, whether you have relapsing MS or progressive MS, this podcast is for you. You're sure to feel empowered and inspired after each episode. Ready? Let's dive in. Tyler, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm excited to talk.
Yeah, me too. I'm excited for the world to find out what you have up your sleeve and what just launched. But before we get into that, is it okay if I ask you a question from my interview deck?
Absolutely.
All right. We are almost done with this deck, by the way. This is my second deck, meaning I must have had almost over 100 people that I've interviewed because there's 52 questions per deck.
That is a lot.
It is. Okay. Your question is, what is something you don't mind sharing with other people?
Oh boy. I guess potato chips. I'm thinking about the kids sitting around the sofa and passing around snacks. So I guess popcorn and potato chips.
I love that. That reminds me of the Friends episode where Joey doesn't share food. Did you ever watch Friends?
No. Yeah, I watch a lot of Friends, but I don't remember that one.
Oh my gosh. He's on this. I think it's a first date, and his date like take some of his fries or something. I can't remember exactly what it is. And he refuses to go on a second date with her because she ate his food. That's awesome. That was a tough question. I don't know what I would say for that one.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, we share a lot of snacks on the couch and then it ends up inside of the couch.
Yeah. Do you have any pets to clean up what it was left
behind?
We have
no, well, I have a one-year-old baby who's kind of a pet at this point.
She'll
Perfect. Get anything that you drop. She'll just put it in her mouth and go to town. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And then when the third one, they just kind of, they become a pet.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, let's dive into this. So I'm assuming most people might not know who you are yet, at least. So can you first explain and just tell us who you are and what your background is?
Absolutely. So my name is Tyler Susco. I'm from Pennsylvania originally on the East Coast. I grew up there and studied engineering as an undergrad and business. Afterwards, got a job at this company called Club Car, which was owned by Ingersoll Rand. I was designing parts for all-terrain vehicles, golf carts, and things like that. Moved up to New Jersey. The first job was in Georgia. Went up to New Jersey, started designing power tools. Thought that was really cool. So I became a pretty good design engineer at that point. Designed a cordless impact wrench. At that time, I made the decision I'm going to go to grad school and ended up at MIT, did my PhD there in rehabilitation robotics, which led me to you, Gretchen. While I was at MIT, I was developing this big robotic system for gait and how people walk. And the unique thing about that system was that it's two treadmills that were right next to one another, very little gap in between. And I could change the speeds on those treadmills and I could also drop the treadmill surface away, which allowed people to swing their foot forward freely and easily. And then I tested that with people with neuro injury and found that, among other things, rehabilitative benefits, which was the reason we were developing the machine, was that it was just really easy to walk in a device that removed the floor whenever you were in swing phase of walking or the phase of walking where we bring our foot forward to advance our gait. So for people that normally would have trouble or scuff their foot, this machine just made it free and easy to walk. And so at the end of that study, this was 2015 when that ended, I moved to UC Santa Barbara. I'm a professor here in mechanical engineering. And one of the people that was in my pilot study there in Boston said, hey, you know, it would be great if you could take that machine and I didn't have to be in a lab. If I could just take that feeling of walking everywhere because it was free and easy. And so we said, okay, well, why don't we try? Let's build it. And it just so happened, it's like these weird things that happen in your life, right, Gretchen, where you're like, how did this actually become like this? But she ended up moving to Santa Barbara, the participant in that study, and I was going to UC Santa Barbara. So we're like, let's just work together on this. So she moved here and we started to just crank out ideas. The first was a robotic shoe that did the same thing that the treadmills did, where the shoe would collapse as you moved your foot forward robotically. And that was just, you know, robots on shoes and outside of the lab are not as good as you might think they'd be. They're heavy, they're expensive, cumbersome, prone to errors, software failures, things like that. So if you're relying on that to be stable and to be able to walk, that could be a problem. So first shoes were robotic. We learned a lesson of don't do robotic shoes. And then we started to go further and further every year into something that was a more passive shoe or didn't have motors or anything like that. And we came up with these cadence shoes. So if you can see the screen, I've got one here. And effectively what they are, they're doing the same thing as that robot at MIT, where it reduces the penalty for failing to clear the floor. So it allows you to swing forward. If you clip the floor, got a piece of paper here, it slides nice and easy on it, so you won't trip. So we had this idea after a few iterations of these robotic shoes, and we ran a study here at UCSB, just a pilot study with five people with neuro injury or disease, including somebody with multiple sclerosis. And we found that people that had a certain walking pattern, like circumduction or some sort of compensatory thing, when they put these shoes on, the gait normalized, and we saw speed improvements very quickly. And we said to ourselves, this is really interesting. So I think I'm probably getting into your next question, but that's kind of my background and the story of how I got into this area.
I love that. And I think that's really cool because so often when people are part of a clinical trial that's successful, they want to be able to continue to do that thing that brought them success at home or outside of the clinic, outside of the lab. But very rarely, especially when you're working with robotics, is that actually feasible. So I just love that, like, that's how this all started. And then your brain started going of, okay, how can I bring this to more people from the comfort of their own home?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So I think, you know, this is kind of I think it's going to start kind of a trend in my life where we start with the complicated and then to understand and to learn. And then once we learn something new that we couldn't have gotten without something very complicated like a robot, then we figure out how do we make this practical for people's lives. So make something complicated as simple as possible. And then you can actually put it out there.
Right. So I'm curious, how many different variations of this shoe have you had that where you started with the robotic shoe and now you landed at what the cadence shoe is?
Yeah. So if I were to try to find a number, I'd say probably about 40 or 50. 40
oh my
or 50
gosh.
Different. Yeah. We had all kind of crazy stuff. So the robot, I have some in my office, the robot shoe started, and then we started, the second shoe was a spring actuated piston that would spring out this way and then effectively get rid of all the space in here if you were to scuff your foot. And that sounded really great. But then we had the person that the participant in my first study who was in Santa Barbara try it. And the second, you know, we were holding on to her and she was going down the stairs. The platform went, oh, that's not going to work. So it died on day one. So as soon as we tried it, it was dead. So that one was unsafe. But it was interesting. One of the students that worked on that project, because these were student projects that I was building out here at UCSB and working with the students, and we were doing one-year projects. They were learning about neuro disease and therapy and what to do. And then we would design little devices together. One of the students was like, I'd like to do my master's on this. And so that's where we had the idea, okay, well, this isn't going to work. So we're going to have to go and figure this out some more. So we started with a whole team of students trying to figure out, this isn't going to work. Well, what will? So we started cutting holes in shoes and we did everything. We had one-way bearings that allowed it to go, like have a wheel that would go in one direction, but not the other. So you could push off, but allow it to slide in one direction. We did all these other types of geometries. I had these things that would buckle under your weight. So as soon as you put weight on it, the whole bottom would buckle, but that felt very uncomfortable. So it was like, okay, we can't do that. So yeah, the answer is about 40, maybe 50 different revisions before we got here, which is why it took from 2015 to 2023.
Yeah. Oh my
but
gosh.
I think we're there now.
I love that. That's so cool. I feel like we have a behind the scenes look as to what actually went into this too. Now, absolutely. I have a question. So I can think of so many people that would benefit from this type of shoe where it mm-hmm. allows you to basically, if I'm understanding correctly, it allows you to scuff the ground without that getting in your way of moving. So you can still move at the pace that you normally want to move.
Yes.
So for people with MS, foot drop, of course, is a huge, very common symptom. Yeah. As you mentioned, hip circumduction or swinging your leg. So MS or any other disease where that's the case.
Yeah.
But I'm curious. So you said that it allowed in the trials that you ran, it allowed the participants to walk faster. Did it also result in fewer trips because it allowed them to just keep moving? Like how did tripping come into play, if at all?
Yeah. You know, this is one thing that's still out there. And one of my greatest interests in the next couple of years is to do like a fall reduction study. But to answer your question more directly, we were seeing, we had our pilot study, which was published in 2019. We had five people, including the one with MS, in our lab here at UCSB. And at that point, we were cutting holes into big thick-soled shoes and putting in these different sliding patches that were inside of there, which would never have worked outside of the lab at that point. It was just because it was a straight hard floor, you know, no bumps. We were fine with it. And what we did in that study is we put people, we gave them the shoes. They got 2 minutes to walk in a full support harness because at that point we didn't know what we were getting ourselves into. So they're walking back and forth in our lab in a full support harness in case they fell. And just to acclimate, when they felt comfortable, we brought them outside the lab. We had 10 meters taped off for the 10-meter walk test to gauge speed. So we did that 10-meter walk test before having these shoes and then after that 2 minutes of training with the shoes. And that's where we found that some people were walking 20 to 60% faster in these shoes. And we said, okay, that's interesting. So as soon as they were done with that, we brought them into the lab and we had a treadmill with a six camera setup that had markers all over the legs. We had infrared markers and these infrared cameras that then could map the 3D motion of the people as they walked. And the people that improved their speed in that specific five-person little pilot were people that circumducted. So what we saw afterwards is they no longer were pulling the hip out so far to get forward. They were just coming forward. And this was with no instructions at that point, because we didn't know what we were doing. We were cutting holes in shoes at that point. So there were no instructions. It was put this shoe on and see what you think. And of course, when they put it on, they would take their foot and they would kind of swish it around a little bit, which is now what we coach people to do. Like, and they started to feel, okay, this kind of moves. And so we saw the gait pattern, instead of now coming out, we saw it start to just go forward. And if they did scuff that floor, it just kept going. So they were able to just go without having to think about this kind of like floppy throwing motion, which was kind of interesting to us. So at that point, we're like, oh, wow, that's interesting. So after that paper launched, we applied for a grant through the California Nanoscience Institute and CNSI, which is luckily on campus here at UCSB, which has a seed tech grant program, which they take some sort of technology that you think might be scalable out into the world. And they give you some money to go and develop it further with the idea of commercialization at some point. So we were able to take these, you know, hole drilled shoes that we had that had big holes in the bottom of these shoes with these low friction pucks. And then we were able to use that to work with a shoe designer in a factory to start to actually make the first prototypes of these shoes. So then we went through three iterations of that. And that took a whole year. But afterwards, we had something that we thought could be brought outside of the lab. Yeah, so that's, again, getting a little further than your question asked. But yeah, just trying to answer your question in terms of what was happening to these people as they were walking faster. And it was just they were normalizing gait. I've talked to a lot of people, and I'm sure you have too, where when it becomes difficult to walk and it's difficult to clear the ground, a lot of the times people will start, that's all they think about is like, oh God, I don't want to trip. I don't want to trip. Don't trip. Don't trip. And that's very mentally taxing. So one of the things that I think that I've heard from people that have worn these shoes is that it removes that fear a little bit, because if you fail to clear the floor, your foot will just come and slide forward. It's allowing you to extend your base of support. If you trip or your foot stops, right? That's really what a trip is. The foot is going to come in contact with the floor. Now it stops, but your momentum from walking is still going forward. And now your momentum or your center of mass is now in front of your base of support, which is the standard physics problem of that it's going to fall over. If you're able to extend your base of support out forward, because if you chip the ground, your foot still goes forward. Now your center of mass is behind that point. And so from our standard physics problem, we're now stable.
Yeah.
So that's the idea, but I have no data on actual falling yet. That's one of the things I want to work on.
Yeah, that's really cool. Oh my gosh, I have so many thoughts. First of all, I feel like a shoe like this, based on what you just said, would also help reduce isolation, because I feel like some people, and potentially a lot of people, because they have difficulty with walking and they are fearful of falling, they just avoid it at all costs. So they become more sedentary and then they become weaker. Yeah, that's not ideal. But also, you mentioned the 20 to 60% improvement in walking faster.
Yeah.
That's huge. That's crazy. Yeah.
And I have to couch that with, that was like five, that was five people.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
But it's interesting. One of those people that did improve their speed, and this is published, it's published in the EMBC Proceedings 2019 in Berlin. So I'm happy to share the paper with you or a link to it if people want to look at it. But yeah, we saw it was a crazy improvement in speed. And when we looked at it, we were pretty perplexed by it because there weren't any instructions. It was just put it on, see what happens. And certainly that doesn't happen for everybody. It happened in that study. Two of the people were non-responders in that study. Those two people didn't exhibit kind of circumduction. They had cerebral palsy. So their gait was much more pronounced inward kind of scissor gait, where they were walking and stepping. And I don't think they were utilizing the scuffing motion as well. Not to say that it wouldn't work for them over time, but it didn't work immediately like that. The other people, they changed their gait quickly. And I think about it and I've thought about like, well, why did that happen? And I think I hurt my knee last year playing basketball. So when I hurt my knee, instantaneously within 30 seconds as I'm hobbling to like a bench to sit down, my gait changed. My gait changed in probably a way to optimize something, maybe optimize my gait in a way that minimized my pain or made it just easier to walk or something. Our bodies are so good at adapting to changes in constraints. And so we do that whenever we injure ourselves. So here, once the body kind of figured out, I think this is my guess, that there is a different constraint here where I don't have to worry as much, the gait pattern started to change pretty quickly.
Yeah. And you know, what that happens so often with hip circumduction, you know, that swinging out to this side, where at least for me, I have so many clients that I work with where they don't even realize they're doing it.
The only
time they notice it is when I tell them or I show them as they're walking in front of a mirror and they're like, oh, I didn't realize I was doing that. And that becomes a bad habit so quickly. Our body understands like, oh, I can move forward if I swing my leg around. Yep. Great. I'm going to do that every time.
Yep. And then you don't think about it.
Right. Yeah. And then you just get weaker in your hip flexors and your knee flexors. So I feel like this type of shoe would be perfect to go along with physical therapy because it could help you work on proper gait mechanics and strengthening the appropriate muscles. So
that's correct. Yes.
I'm all in.
Yeah. That's what we think too. And, you know, on that line, we just were funded. We submitted a grant with the Ability Lab, and you're familiar with them in Chicago. We submitted it last year. We got the grant, 3 or 4 months ago. So we're starting a clinical trial at Ability Lab with 50. Now these are stroke patients in this trial, but same type of gait patterns. But we're going to look at what happens now when you train with the shoe for 12 weeks, 5 days a week. And as you said, physical therapy, the tool is only as good as how you use it. So if you're with a physical therapist that's encouraging you to walk daily in the shoes, it's probably a good thing. We ran a beta test before we kind of launched this company to make sure it was safe for people to use outside of the laboratory. And I had 19 people join that beta test. And it was interesting to me how much some people could improve over time with using it daily. So that was the thing. When they use it daily, I would send people a logbook. That logbook would have how much time did you walk? How many steps did you walk? They had just a simple pedometer. For some people that walk slower, the pedometer doesn't actually pick up steps if they're too slow. So they had somebody sitting there and click counting for them on how many steps. But doing it 5 days a week really had some interesting results for people in our little beta test after.
That's
but
cool.
This one will be good. This is a big test now at Ability Lab. It's a 4-year clinical trial where we'll be studying people. And we're directly comparing those people directly to people that are just going to be wearing AFOs to see what happens functionally over a 12-week period with the shoes versus a 12-week period with the AFO.
Wow, that's cool. I can't wait for that research to come out. So then is it safe to assume then that you could wear an AFO in the shoe, or should they be just worn separately? How does that work?
So it depends on what the purpose is. So if you're looking to work on your ankle control and your biomechanics of your full leg and free walking, that's how we intended and we designed it to start. However, I am starting to work on something that I think would be optimal for anybody with an AFO. So I expect that AFO style shoe, hopefully in about a year from now, but it's something that I'm currently just developing. So in a year, I should have something specifically for AFOs. Right now, they're made primarily to be worn without an AFO.
That's really cool. Yeah, because I imagine if you are wearing an AFO, if you do still trip, it might be a different part of the bottom of your foot that's scuffing the ground. So yeah, I could see how that might be a little different, how it would be a different shoe.
Yeah. And also, you know, things you think about with an AFO are you want to have variable depth. All AFOs, I've done a whole bunch of research now with AFOs and talking to certified prosthetists, orthotists on how they're made and thickness and what need. If you have a heel lift, so you're seeing a lot of people with heel lifts. So heel lifts are popping you up, like could be almost as much of an inch inside of your shoe. So you have to have something that allows you to drop down inside of the shoe fairly significantly. And there aren't really any options for that. So we're going to try to develop a shoe that's specifically based on AFOs. And that's kind of the next thing to come. But currently, you could try to get an AFO in these shoes, but they're going to be offered in regular widths and then also wide widths. But typically when you're fitting a shoe to an AFO, people are looking for extra wide or extra wide shoes and extra deep. And we don't have that right now.
Gotcha. Oh, that's cool. Oh, I'm so excited. Yeah. So I feel like this next question is kind of obvious, but it'll be worth at least mentioning. What would you say one or two, or just what are the biggest differences between this shoe, the Cadence shoe, and other shoes that are out there? Because I have seen other shoes that are geared more towards people with walking limitations, but more so in the sense of they're just easier to put on.
Absolutely.
But how would you compare this shoe to others that exist?
Absolutely. That's a great question. And yes, there's a lot of shoes out there that, you know, Nike did a great job with this. And there's a really cool story about their FlyEase line of shoes where I think somebody wrote to them saying they really liked the basketball shoes, but they had trouble putting them on. So could you help us put them on? And there's been a really cool movement in the last, I'd say it's probably 5 to 10 years with people making shoes that were easier to get on. That's our shoes are, we had that in our mind when we were designing them, and our shoes are very easy to get on, but the difference is really in the sole and what it does. It's the slip stick. So one thing we talked about was the slipping. We haven't talked about the sticking. So what we call them is a variable friction shoe. So the soles have low friction patches on there. They're kind of like skis. If you're listening on audio and you can't see, they're kind of like skis where if you hit a bump, they'll just ski right over it. But once you put your weight on it, there's a separate piece of foam and it looks to be the same as the rest of the shoe, but it's not. It's real squishy. That's directly underneath the ski. As you put your weights on, the skis will retract up into the shoe. And when the skis retract, you get this high friction rubber that's on the bottom. So it's meant to only have low friction, exhibit low friction when you're scuffing your foot, if you scuff your foot. But as soon as you put your weight on the shoe, the traction takes over and you're now stuck to the floor and you have all your traction to be able to toe off and to walk properly. So that's how they differ. It's really the sole. It's the variable friction nature of the sole. The rest of it, we worked with a bunch of designers. You'd be amazed how long it took to get this to look pretty. So we learned long ago, I did this program through the National Science Foundation, which is take your technology and talk to a whole bunch of people about it. And one thing that I realized with anybody that had a disability with their mobility, just as important as function, which is what the sole does for us, is fashion. People want to look good. And that was across the board. It was one of these things where I do a lot of, I'm a product designer. I'm a machine designer, really. And I'm designing shoes. But, you know, looking at when you design any product, the first step is trying to understand what do people need and want in that product. So in talking to people, you want to see, okay, what keeps coming up in conversations? What do they keep saying? What do they keep saying? Everybody said, it needs to look good or I'm not wearing it. I don't want this to be an orthotic looking shoe. I want to look good. So we worked with actually two different shoe designers to get this right. One of which was a famous shoe designer that he was like designing shoes for like Kyrie Irving and things. And then we had another guy who was a very practical guy that could get it into production for us. And they made it look, I think it looks really pretty. And so we've had great feedback on the look of it. Yeah.
I love that. I agree.
But that's how
they look really cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so true. I think there's definitely, I've noticed that trend as well, even with other forms of mobility aids. Like if someone's using a rollator or a walking stick or a cane, they want it to represent them and look like their personality. They want it to look good, which I think is so great. I think it makes everyone who's creating these products, you know, create something maybe out of their comfort zone that does match that vibe.
Yes.
Because otherwise, when we think of rollators or canes, we tend to think of the silver ones that you'd see in a hospital. Yep. And then that's what we associate. So I love that.
Absolutely.
I love the look of the shoe as well. It looks very sleek and classic.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. So where can people find these? So I feel like we've spent a lot of time just talking about them, but if someone is interested in getting them or at least just checking them out, where is the best place for them to do that?
For sure. So our website is cadence.com, C-A-D-E-N-S-E. So it's not spelled like cadence as we walk. It sounds like it, but there's an S at the end. So it's C-A-D-E-N-S-E.com. And on that website, the first thing you're going to see is a video of how they work. So you'll see somebody squashing it. So you'll see that they kind of look like a catamaran from the front. You've got these kind of like the two skis on the outside. And then the center is this high friction stuff is actually a gap under your foot. If you're going to just scuff your foot, as soon as you put the weight on it, you'll see how the middle comes down and contacts the ground. It makes a lot more sense when you see the video. So if people are interested, I'd say just go there. You can order them directly from the website and you can read all about the, you know, what made us create them and the research behind and things of that nature.
I love that. Yeah. And I'll put that link in the show notes if anyone just wants to click easily and find instead of typing it in.
Cool.
But this has been so exciting. I love being able to share new resources and new tools with all of my listeners. So thank you so much for joining me today and for sharing your story and your shoe with us.
Well, thanks so much. It was great talking to you, Gretchen.
Thank you for listening to today's show. I am so grateful to have you as a listener. If you'd like extra resources, such as a video of one of my seated exercise classes, my favorite core exercises, and the opportunity to ask me your questions, head to missinglink.com/insider. That link will be shared in the show notes along with links to my social media handles. If you loved this episode and think a friend or family member with MS would benefit from listening, please go ahead and text or email this podcast to them right now. Sharing this podcast will help me educate and empower as many MS warriors as possible. Thanks again for joining, and be sure to tune in next week for another episode of the Missing Link Podcast.